Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the channel for a brand new edition of Collider Ladies Night with an old favorite, Dominique Fishback, and back on the show, this time for Swarm. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You are electric in this.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thanks.
I mean it. All right. So the first thing we do now on Ladies Night, you didn't experience this last time, is we play a game called Dicey Questions. I have a dice tower behind me and you get three rolls on the tower and whatever random questions I roll for you, that's where we start at least.
Okay. All right. I'm ready. All right.
First one up.
I'm nervous.
All right, we're starting off with the number 8. I feel like there's nothing to be in there. Actually, you got a meaty one to start here. And this is one of my favorite questions. It's called High Low. Okay. Can you give me one audition high, but then also tell me about an audition low and how you overcame it or what you learned from it?
Interesting. Audition high. I think audition high had to be Project Power. I had to do chemistry tests with Jamie Foxx, and I was so nervous, and the audition, I had to be really emotional. So I didn't know if I wanted to, like, show my bubbly personality or, like, just be in character. And, like, as my car pulled up, Jamie's car pulled up, and I came out, and I just said, Mr. Jamie Foxx. And he was like, oh, your energy's crazy. And he, like, gave me a hug and then went into the audition. My character raps in a movie. That he asked me if I rapped. And I said, no, but I'm a spoken word poet. He said, go on, do something for us then. So I get up and I do an original poem called Ode to My Hood about Brooklyn. And they just, like, loved it. And then I didn't get the part. So maybe that's a low. I did not get the part originally.
Wow, how did I not know that?
Yeah, I don't know. So I didn't get the part originally. And then a whole month later, I got a call from my team saying, actually, they do want you for the movie. It didn't work out with somebody else because of scheduling conflicts. So they want you to come to New Orleans. And I thought I was going to be in New Orleans for like a month and a half. I was there for 4 months. I was really thrown. So I guess that's a mix. But it ended up working out.
I can't imagine that movie without you. Aww, and obviously thanks. That role without you, that's something else.
Thank you.
I might try to work that in later in the conversation.
Yeah.
All right, you got your second role now.
Yes.
All right, we're moving over to a number 5. Oh, you're getting all my meaty acting questions. I like this. I call this one favorite, least favorite. What is your absolute favorite part of the acting process? Prepping for a role, rehearsing, putting your costume on for the first time, but then also what's not necessarily your least favorite, but a part of the process where you see room to grow for yourself and you're eager to tackle that?
Oh, I'll start with the one that I'm eager to, like, grow from. I think I'm such a mommy's girl. Yeah, I'm so close to my family. I'm one of 19 grandkids. And my family makes jokes like they didn't expect me to ever leave my mom's house and go places. So to have to go away and film for 4 or 5 months at a time and you leave everybody that you love and your home and the things that help you to feel grounded. So that's kind of hard. And I'm navigating that because as I do more things, it's going to be, you know, touring and going to different places. Around the world, so I just gotta kind of get used to that and find kind of home within myself a little bit more.
I share that challenge with you. I'm a big baby, finally ripped the Band-Aid off a couple years ago and moved to LA.
Nice.
Now I That's still go good. Home as much as I possibly can, which you can still do as much as you want.
Exactly. And then the other question was...
Your favorite part of the acting process.
Honestly, my favorite part of the acting process is finding out just how much I could get into a character. I think a lot of times we, you know, as an actor, like, I think I could do that. I want to do that. I hope to be able to do that. Then you get the opportunity and you're like, oh, shoot, can I do that? And then you kind of go through the process and you find out at the end that you could. Or maybe it wasn't right for you, but either way, you learned something.
Oh, I'm going to follow up on that now, actually. Of all of the roles that you've done thus far, which one had you doubting yourself the most that ultimately you wound up pulling off?
I mean, we'll see about this. I don't know if I've pulled it off yet, right?
Like, I've only seen 2 episodes, but I will say you pull it off, like, spectacularly thus far.
Thank you. I guess it would have to be this one. I had to get out of my own way about things, like perception, how it would look. When I was in college, I remember I had to do this play, and they wanted my hair to be natural for the play, and at that point, my hair wasn't, and I was very nervous about going natural. But then I told myself, if I have something that the character requires and I don't do it because of how I'm going to look, then I might not be doing my job very well. So I take that for this as well. I keep making a joke like, dang, I wish I would have met my husband before this, so you don't have to be scared of me.
I respect that thought on that, though. You have one more role in the tower.
Okay.
I can't believe my cat has not lunged for that die right now. we are ending this with a number 2. This is a fun one that pertains to Swarm. I'm calling it Pricey Tickets. What artist, sports team, event, whatever it may be, are you most likely to overspend on?
Yeah, it's such a funny question, because Dre is such a stan, and I just never really been one. The first concert I ever saw was in 2018. So imagine, like, going most of my life without ever seeing a concert.
Like, ever, ever?
Ever.
What was it?
It was actually Jay-Z. 444. And I did the music video, so that was a deeper connection than just going to see one. But I would have to say, I love J. Cole. So I'll probably just want to buy a ticket to see J. Cole.
Rock solid choice right there. All right, let's get into the meat of our conversation. My first question for you refers back to pretty much all of our previous conversations, because you've always mentioned vision boards. And the last time we spoke, you were telling me about how your vision board making process has evolved and you started to make them using a PDF format instead. So it was making me wonder, over the last, I guess it was 2 years, how has your vision board making process evolved, whether it's from the tech side or just personally for you? What's been going on them lately?
Well, it's so funny, because for the last about 6 or 7 years, I made a vision board at the end of a year to go into the beginning of the new one. Maybe by like January 3rd, I'm normally finished with it to say this is it. But for the first time, my vision board, I didn't finish it, and I didn't feel compelled to like throw stuff on it to like beat some kind of time clock. I just was like, you know what? I did this, and I'm just going to wait it out and see. But yeah, I think I'm more open to not controlling things and letting it flow and seeing what happens, I think. So we'll see. Maybe next year I'll go back to it.
That's such a good answer to that, though, because I'm someone who's constantly in fear of not finishing things being a bad thing. But yeah. I think that sometimes not finishing things is prioritizing what's most important to self at a point.
Yeah, and like in other ways, I'm working on myself. So maybe this is the first time where the vision board will I will kind of guide the vision board as opposed to the vision board guiding me. In some kind of way. And this might be the 7th one. They said 7th is the year of completion. So maybe it's a new way that I'm going to start doing some things.
It's a good way to look at it. I appreciate that. Yeah. All right. I also always love bringing up somebody who studies their craft at school. It's the right path for some, not for others. Yes. Everything is okay. So you got a BA at Pace.
I did.
Looking back now, what is something that you learned from that program that you still find yourself using and referring back to? But on the other hand, what is something that like all the schooling in the world never would have prepared you for when you hit your very first professional set?
I will say the thing that school can't prepare you for is hitting your mark. Like, we don't talk about that. I mean, the camera's here. You have to walk and not look down and, like, talk to somebody while it's moving. And, there's a mark there that you have to hit without looking at it. We don't talk about that. I think we probably should practice that a little bit more in school. The art of, like, being a movie star versus being an actor, I think that's different. And I think that's important too. A lot of times in school, because I think they want to ground you in the craft, they say, that's not important. Fame's not important. Celebrity's not important. And maybe it isn't, but there's also, if you ignore it, then maybe you're not prepared for when it comes. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's so interesting.
I think, but what I love about school that I think, I think is honestly like knowing your peers and seeing how they evolve and how you can evolve together. I think that's pretty cool.
Oh, I second that.
Because otherwise it's so singular and it's such an individual experience that imagine me, for example, I was in a theater company and in the same theater company, Dominique Thorne, who plays Riri, Riri Williams, and yes, holla, shout out to her. She's from Brooklyn. She was in the same youth company theater that I was in. And so now to like kind of look across or be in rooms with her and be like, oh, we came from the same childhood, essentially, not exactly, but like the same theater company. And that means a lot. So I think it gives community.
Whenever someone on this show mentions somebody else's name that I admire, I always like put a little pin. Yay! And I'm like, soon in the future, I will insist on getting her on the show.
Yes, please.
Going back to what you just mentioned about celebrity, what would you say is maybe the biggest misconception about wrapping your brain around celebrity versus just craft that you wish more people knew about?
There's definitely glamour in the industry, like being an actor. It's glamorous. You get to wear all these cool things and see all the cool people and go to the premieres and things like that. But also, it's not like, you know, you do 17-hour days on sets. You sometimes do 6-day weeks, like, and you're like, you know, doing Transformers. Like, I'm really in the jungle, like being afraid of, like, I don't know, poison frogs and things like that could kill you in an hour. Like, there, it's real. It's acting, but it is real, and it does take a toll. And so sometimes I think one of the hardest things is, you know, we want to act when the camera when it says action, but you also end up acting outside of action, because if let's say I'm sad today, something happened, but now you have all these people looking to you to give them a good experience of having met you. And they're not wrong for wanting that. They've admired you, they've watched you. It's you know, they want to feel good by meeting you, and also you're a human. So to like act on action, then say cut, and then have to act again and make sure a whole swarm, no pun intended, a crew, like a whole crew of different people that, you know, they just want to say hi. And so you try to give them everything that you got and then give everything that you got on screen. And that's not always easy.
I feel very strongly about that. Yeah. I appreciate your mentality about it. This has become one of my absolute favorite ladies' night questions to ask. I'm so happy you're back, so now I can ask it to you. So to highlight all the different types of processes there are out there, can you tell me about one co-star where the second you hit set, you were immediately in sync, but then I want the opposite, someone who challenged you to adapt and maybe try something new and for the better?
I'll say Daniel Kaluuya. I think he's probably both answers, right? Because with Daniel, I had to learn, like, there was a scene that I really wanted us to, like, work on, that Shaka, the director, writer, to, like, pay a little closer attention to. And he had to focus on everything else. So I remember we were about to do the scene the next day, and I was like, I don't think he's right yet. And I talked to Daniel about it, and he agreed, and he was like, oh, I'll talk to Shaka. And I was like, when? He was like, tomorrow. I was like, tomorrow? But we shoot it tomorrow. He's like, yeah, sometimes they can only focus on the thing that's right in front of them. And they'll be able to hear you at that point. And I was like, okay. And so in the morning, I'm in hair and makeup. And I'm like, did he speak to Shaka yet? Did he speak to Shaka? And then I had to say, Dominique, he said he's going to do it. Let the man do what he says he's going to do. And he did it. And we got to work it out. And so that was a way of, like, it taught me how to approach directors and writers at a more opportune time, I guess. You know, which is before it would have been along the lines of like the vision board and like trying to control. Like, no, I need, if we get this answer now, then it'll be out the way. But no, sometimes people just need it when it's the time.
Bringing up Judas and the Black Messiah makes me think of another question that I bring back fairly often, because the idea of having like a breakout performance in Hollywood often means one thing to the people watching it happen compared to the person that's actually going through it. And I know you won a bunch of breakthrough awards and got nominations for your performance in that movie. So What would you say is one misconception about what it means to break out in Hollywood, but also what is something that did change for the better because of that?
Oh, I just the idea of like how many times can a person break out? You know what I mean? Like, do you keep breaking out after you've been doing it for 10 years or 9 years? Like, am I still breaking out? But I think one of the, what was the other part of the question?
Like a misconception about it and then something that actually did change for the better because of it.
Yeah, something that did change for the better because of it is, I just think it's the audience that you touch. I could go to different places and, I think one thing is like being in New York and all summer I decided to ride the train because I was like, you know, maybe when Transformers comes out, maybe I won't be able to do it as freely. Like, maybe my life will change. So I was doing that and then people would be like, oh, hi, good to see you again. And they think that I'm like some old friend and I'm like, good to see you too. And then sometimes they'll catch it and be like, oh, sorry. But otherwise, and I think maybe breaking out changed that idea.
There's something really sweet about it being from the old friend angle. I kind of like that.
Yeah. That's what I feel like. It's like they think, oh, good to see you again. Or I know you from, we did this project, we did this poetry thing, and I'm a poet. So it could be that, but it's normally not that. But it's weird, too, because I don't want to be like, oh, you saw me in Judas? You don't want to list things off because that's kind of weird, too. So then you start staring at them like to help them figure it out. It's look weird. It's kind of weird sometimes.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's another big, broad question. I had just done a movie that had a writer's block component in it. So it made me think about this question. But can you give me an example of a scene that you were having a really hard time cracking? Basically, you know, the actor's version of writer's block, and then tell me how you overcame that challenge or what you needed to do to figure that scene out so it made sense to you.
I can't even think right now. I feel like there's so many. Ultimately, when I feel like I can't crack a scene is because I'm too afraid to advocate, I think. You know, or to just speak and ask a question. You know, I think if it ever feels like that, the only way to overcome it is to talk about it. That I feel like that goes in life in general. But if there is a scene and I'm like, doesn't work out, but maybe they had already decided that it was going to be blocked like this and the lights are here and the camera's here. Now you don't want to be the actor that comes in and like, that doesn't really make sense, but you have to. And if it doesn't change, that's okay. But at least you spoke about it and you don't have to go to sleep being like, did I miss a moment? Could I have better whatever for the character, you know?
Oh, now I'm curious. I know you said you couldn't think of any examples, but even if it's something recent like Swarm, is there an example of a time when you knew in yourself that you needed clarity or needed to change something? You did find the courage to speak up and it changed the scene for the better.
I mean, I think overall there's been so many in that. But for example, the dancing aspect in episode 2. Originally there was supposed to be two dances, the one where she's really silly, you know, about it, and then the other one where she's actually good at it. And then at a certain point, the one where she was good at it or better at it was taken out, and I thought that it had to be back in. because it actually contributed to the storyline. You know, it would have been a plot hole because those girls were they were bullying her. What other reason would they have to have her come along to be where she needed to be in order for the show to progress? Otherwise, if they would have just invited her out of the blue without at least her showing a confidence or showing that she can get money or whatever, then it would kind of seem like it was put on the character to do it as opposed to it coming from the character. And with the second dance, it earned her a bit more respect from the dancers to then have them invite her, which then cleared a potential plot hole, I think.
Oh, absolutely. It's also absolutely vital to see those smaller moments of growth to ensure that she keeps evolving in a way that you could believe throughout the season.
And it was important to me for her to be able to go. When you see the rest of the season, there's so many levels of energy, feminine, masculine energy that she incorporates in any character or version of herself that she's being. And I think within doing the silly dance and the better one, you can see that she has more autonomy and control over what she does. Otherwise, with the one dance, I feel like it might seem like everything is happening to her and she has no control. So she's just so unaware. But it's actually scarier that she can turn that little seductive one on and then decide, you know what, I don't want to do it like that. But now as the audience member, you're like, well, she can't do it like that. You know what I mean? So I think that's cool.
Speaking about advocating for yourself, I was reading that originally you were approached for the role of Marissa, but it's you who pushed to play Dre instead. Yeah. So what was it about the character that inspired you to make that move? And then how'd you go about convincing the creators to actually make the switch?
Well, the good thing is I didn't have to push. It literally was like, Donna was like, if that's the role you want, that's the role you get. And that was like, oh, wow. Because I thought, okay, maybe I have to audition for it. But that was the answer. And it was like, we were on the phone. So I got up to him and I was like, wait, did I get the part or did I not get the part? Or was he just speaking? Or did he say? Like, it was like confused. But I told him that he was like, well, why do you want that part? And I said, well, as an actor, I never want to catch up to myself. You know, I don't even want to know what I'm going to do next. I think about myself as a child and watching TV and saying, I want to be a versatile actor. And what does that mean? And I have to go to the inner child who wanted to be an actor, who watched Monster with Charlize Theron, or watched Boys Don't Cry with Hilary Swank, or, you know, or watched Heath Ledger as a Joker, or whatever it is, and wanting to do character work and finally being able to get the opportunity to do that was exciting. And it was scary. It was not an easy thing for me to do. Once I got it, I was like, oh man, what did I do? I don't even know the rest of the series. I don't know what I'm gonna do. What am I gonna do? Like, you know, and I had to journal myself and identify points that were scary to me and why. Is it a real fear to me, or is it a social idea or social fear that I'm putting on? Like, what is somebody else gonna perceive? What are they gonna think about me? Those type of questions. And if I do that, then essentially I'm allowing myself to get imprisoned by my own artistry. And I could not risk the chance to do that. So I had to risk it another way.
I had a feeling you were going to bring up the journaling for this role, and I can't even imagine what
that
journal looked
like. I did not go there. No, I did it for myself. I did it for myself to identify and clear any blockages that I might have in order to play Dre, because we are not in the line in any kind of way. And normally, I am with my characters, I can say, oh yeah, I understand that completely. You know, and it has been easier. But this one was a different challenge.
Okay, so sticking in non-spoiler territory, this might be a challenging thing to answer, but between all of those, you know, extreme decisions she makes, and maybe just her headspace in general, is there any particular, you know, corner of her life, her backstory, or a choice she makes in non-spoiler territory that you found most challenging to really wrap your head around and, you know, justify as the person who needs to bring her to life on screen?
Honestly, I didn't wrap my head around any of it. I didn't try to justify any of it. I just tried to be present in the moment of, because I, you know, I didn't do a lot of writing on the script. I didn't do all the stuff that I would have did the psychological work. I didn't do that because there was no way to track her psychologically to me. So that wasn't the way to do. I had to just clear out my own judgments of her and potentially of myself to be an actor to do it. And then allow myself to be present listening to the other actors and just knowing that she makes the decisions that she makes and then moving step by step with the decision that she makes and not thinking too much about the decision. The finale was probably the hardest for me. When you guys see the finale, that was definitely the hardest moment of everything for me. But otherwise, yeah.
Honestly, I can't even imagine based on what I've seen. I'm so eager to see more. I have one spoiler question for you, but I want to add in one more non-spoiler one before we get there, because you're also a producer on this.
Yes.
So how did that credit come into the equation? And having come out of it now, what would you say is an important thing for you to do as a producer that you only realized because of this experience?
Oh, that's good. Honestly, it was like Janine Neighbors asking me like, well, what do you need in order to do the show? And I said, I need to be a producer on the show. Because for me, the type of actor that I've always been, and again, I would do the same work regardless of that title, but I know that I contribute a lot to a story, to the characters. I never just care about the arc of my character. I care about the entire project. And so with this one, where it was really going to be Dre the whole time, then I knew that I was going to be putting in a lot of work and a lot of care. And that I'm deserving. I deserve it, you know? And that was something that I had to, like, oh, you don't want to ask that. You don't want, you know what I'm saying? Stop playing small. It's like, we have one life to live here. We might as well do it big. Do it big or go home, baby.
You keep embracing it, and I believe you will. All right, here is my one spoiler question. It will be labeled appropriately, so it doesn't ruin anything for anyone. But okay. A spoiler for episode one. Please tell me everything about doing the scene immediately after Dre kills
Khalid, because
I mean, there's just like a million things happening, and there's so much, like, the expression and the energy and the emotion is just bursting off your face in that scene.
You know what's great? So importantly, I had one of my friends, an actress named is Monique Coleman. She's been my friend for like 12 years and she knows me and we've been through so many things together. So I wanted her, somebody who knew me, to be on the set that day. I later asked, as a producer too, asked for a therapist to be on set for everybody, not just actors, not just me, crew, for everybody who needs it, because, you know, although it's acting, we don't know what can trigger somebody. So wanted to make sure that there was support in that kind of way. And Monique came and she was like grounded. She was just a grounding force for me because, you know, it's acting. And also you give yourself over. Like I want to tell a story fully. So I just wanted to make sure that I was spiritually good with somebody who loves and cares about me and knows me. So that was important. And so she was there that day. I did not want to be in the same room as Damson, like while we waited. Like, that was also important because I love Damson. I think he's a great actor. I think he's a great energy, a fun person. But I also think he understood, too, because we kind of kept our distance that day. Normally, we're like, oh, we're playing. And then this day, we kind of just kept our distance from each other. And then the other thing with the energy. So that shot was done in one shot. In one take. And I remember it was a big discussion because if any part of it was off, then it would essentially cost us about an hour, maybe 40 minutes to reset to get it. So I remember Donald was talking to the AD and they were discussing it, like, did he want to risk it? You know, did he want to risk losing the time and not getting a shot for this one shot that he really wanted? And then ultimately he decided that he did want to risk it. And he looked at us as the actors and was like, okay, everybody, look, this is what we need. This is how we need it. You know, we have to go through because otherwise we're going to lose time. And I said, consider it done.
And then, risk well worth taking. My God, what an effective scene.
Yeah, and then I asked Donald, like, what's up with the pie? I don't understand the pie. Like, I really didn't understand it, you know. But it was like, you know, maybe an insatiable hunger that she has that, you know, was the answer. But again, too, I think that as the creators really wanted it to be like, whatever you think it is, then it is. You know what I mean? Like, because even me as an actor, I can't say why Dre did what she did. You know, I could only say that there's something called repressed memories. And at one point in the series, she tells a story and then you hear the story a different way and you don't know which one is true. And I can't tell anybody which one is true because I think Dre probably suppressed her own memories so much that even I didn't have access to it. You know what I mean? Like something like that.
Oh, this is so fascinating. I want to revisit after I've seen the whole season and ask about so many things. We always like to look ahead to the future. And obviously for you, the future includes a Transformers movies. I love watching those movies for the action and the effects, but I also really appreciate when the characters have arcs and some complexity to them. So is there anything you could tease in that particular department for your character in addition to the big spectacle of the film?
I could tease that the same way that I approach maybe like Last Days of Ptolemy Gray or any other project. It's the same way I approached Transformers. It was no different. I remember when I was talking to Stephen Caple about it and I said, listen, Stephen, I'm the type of actor that I want to give notes. I have questions. Or he was like, you could give your notes at 2 o'clock in the morning. I don't care. And I said, okay. So I like, it was one point I gave him pages and pages of like notes and ideas, and not everything was taken, but some things were. And I feel like I could be proud of, haven't seen the edit yet, but I feel like I could be proud of the fact that I advocated for different things that maybe necessarily wouldn't normally be thought of in an action film or the Transformers. So we'll see.
That answer justifies my extra enthusiasm when I heard about who was involved in the new Transformers movie.
Sweet. Thank you.
All right. I got one selfish Transformers question because I love all storytelling. Horror is my number one genre. And I've read a couple of quotes about how the Terrorcons are going to bring horror to the Transformers franchise. So can you kind of tease what kind of horror and maybe to what extent we might get that?
I don't know about that. I think Optimus Prime might have a problem with that. So
that's a very appropriate answer. I'm very excited for that. I am so excited for people to experience where you go in Swarm, because yet again, powerhouse, pitch perfect work. You are something else. The ladies' night door is always open to you.
I appreciate you. Thank you. It's always so much fun to talk to you. Thank you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.